Great to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take up straw bale gardening with our guest, Joel Karsten. He has written a number of best-selling books on straw bale gardening. His latest is called Straw Bale Solutions. Maybe you've done some straw bale gardening. I have for the last several years, and I've had some fun with it. But what about you? How has the method worked for you? Join in the conversation. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Joel Karsten, welcome back. Great to have you with us today.
It's great to be with you, Larry.
Joel, with us by phone today. You know, it's been a couple of years.
Yeah, I think one of the last times I was on with you, you had a substitute host, so I really wasn't on with you. But that's okay. I understand. People got to take vacation. So.
Well, we've talked about this before, but since you haven't been with us for a while, maybe you can talk about how you got into and developed straw bale gardening.
Well, yeah, and I think it's important for anybody out there that's listening, you know, might hear the word straw bale gardening. They might think they know really what it is, but I think it's important to just basically explain what the process is. It's kind of an illusion when you think about growing things in straw, because that's not really what we're doing. What we're doing is growing things in recently decomposed straw on the inside of that bale. So we're just going to get a straw bale or a hay bale, and we're going to condition it for a couple of weeks by adding a little source of nitrogen. That can be organic sources or traditional lawn fertilizer. And that nitrogen feeds the bacteria in the bale, and the bacteria begin to metabolize the straw, and they turn the inside of that bale into brand new virgin soil. So that's the basics of how it works. Now, when I was a kid, I grew up on a dairy farm in southwest Minnesota, and we'd have a busted bale that would lay by the barn and begin to decompose. You know, you'd kind of forget about it. And 6 months later, you'd have these great big giant thistles or ragweed growing out of those or beside those bales. And you knew that there was some nutrients in there and that was holding on to moisture when the rain came. So fast forward 15 years after that, and I graduate from college and I buy a house, and it turns out the house I bought didn't have any topsoil. It had about a 1 inch or half an inch of soil on top of construction dirt. And unfortunately, I didn't have any extra cash at the time to build raised beds. So I kind of thought, you know, since those weeds grow so well out of those decomposing bales, maybe I could try vegetables. I started some experimenting, and here we are now, 25 years after that. And for the first 14 years, I always joked that nobody really cared. I had a few friends and neighbors that were interested, but that was about it. And then the last 11 years, Larry, it's just become this thing. It's spread all over the world, and it's become much bigger than me, that's for sure. But I've written a few books about it to help educate people, and I've been out there, you know, beating the weeds, trying to teach people how to do straw bale gardening at different events all over the world. So.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun for me. I have bales along the south-facing side of my house, and don't have any trees shading it out, and I have really pretty good luck with mine.
Yeah, most people have good luck. You know, there's a couple of, I've even looked already at the Ideas Network Facebook page, and there was a couple of people that posted on there about straw bale gardening using too much water. And that is a concern that I hear from people a lot. But one of the things I try to explain is there are a lot of people that straw bale garden that don't irrigate their bales at all. So, you know, they might in the beginning of the season when they're conditioning the bales, they add a little bit of extra water. But after that, they pretty much let Mother Nature do most of the work. Now, you get to the heat of July, you might need to water a little bit extra. But when people say that their bale garden is using too much water, usually that's a result of them watering too much. It's really what it is. And what happens early in the process, you know, when you're conditioning that bale and you're starting to build bacteria inside the bale, these bacteria are microscopic. You can't even see them unless you have a 400 power microscope. And they're starting to build that soil inside. Now, you come along every day and you pour a whole bunch of water on top of the bale, so much so that it runs through the bale and out the bottom. it's actually washing out lots of those bacteria and those new little soil particles. So then tomorrow, that, that process has to start over again, and it has to build more bacteria and build up more soil. Then you wash it out again. So the plants suffer. As soon as you put plants in the bales, they might turn a little bit yellow. They might wilt a little bit. And then people look at them and they say, oh, my plants are wilting. I got to water more. So then they add more water, and it just exacerbates the problem. So I have a rule. I try to tell this to everybody, 1 gallon per bale per application, never more. Now, you can increase your frequency, so you might have to water twice a day in July when it gets really hot, but never more than 1 gallon per bale per application. Even on a dripper system, just adjust your dripper so that you never get more than 1 gallon each time you water.
I actually have a pail that I know the you know where a gallon is. Once I get that much water in the pail, and I just pour it on, and kind of spread it around the bale, and that takes about a minute.
For people that hand water, it's really easy to control how much you put on. You know, if you've got a dripper system or a soaker hose, you know, people will call me and they'll say, you know, I'm watering 2 to 3 hours a day with my soaker hose, and I seem to have trouble with my bales drying out. And I say, oh, what's happening? You're way over watering. You know, a dripper system, even if you get 2 gallons a minute out of your faucet and you have 10 bales, you only need 10 gallons. That's only 5 minutes worth of water. So it really doesn't take very long to get 1 gallon on each bale. And people will just, you know, they'll just randomly adjust their timer on their dripper or on their soaker to be an hour.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of how much water that gives. And that's really, that's 55 minutes too long of water on that garden. And all that water is running out the bottom, and it's carrying out our nitrogen as well. You know, nitrogen's very soluble, and that'll wash right out the bottom of the bales, and it can actually be a detriment. So people who are too attentive to their garden end up having less good luck.
Joel Karsten, our guest today, talking with him about straw bale gardening, and let me give you a chance to join in. I haven't given the number yet, so I'll do it right now. Questions, comments, experiences to share, give a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org, or go ahead and post your question on our Ideas Network Facebook page. And you should go there anyway and click on our posts. There are some nice photos that Joel has, and we'll get to that, of some of his the work that he's done in other countries. He shared some photos with us, and you may want to go to the Ideas Network Facebook page and take a look at those photos, or you can add your own photos in there as well. We'd certainly love to have you do that. Again, 1-800-642-1234. You know, just to go back, email, we had an email from Blaze, and this goes along with the water thing, which is why I bring it up now. He gardens near a lake. He uses milorganite as a nitrogen source to get them cooking in the beginning, and a little for a supplemental nitrogen source later on. How much should he worry about runoff into the lake from watering the bales? And I guess that kind of goes back to what you were talking about.
Not overwatering is really important. You know, adding a gallon of water to that bale, you're not going to get any run through. So you're not going to have to worry about that. Now, if it rains overnight and you get 3-4 inches of rain, some of that rain may wash some of the nitrogen through the bale and out, because that's really, that's too much water. But I don't think it's any more of a concern than adding nitrogen to a traditional soil garden. You know, straw bale gardening is not going to cause any further contamination than a traditional garden is in terms of nitrogen runoff. I wouldn't worry about that.
You know, one of the things I've noticed, and we'll get to Samantha in Arcadia in just a second here. One of the things I noticed was for tomatoes, blossom end rot ceased to exist for me. And I don't know that that's been the true for other people or not.
Well, you know, blossom end rot, people talk about it being a calcium deficiency or magnesium deficiency. But I think the science, if you really study the science, what it's really about is consistency of moisture.
Yeah.
And the ability for that calcium and magnesium to easily translocate up into the plant. And with straw bale gardening, we have the ability to have consistent moisture. You know, we got this bale soaking wet with water, and it's really hard to get the interior of that bale to dry out. Where, you know, your top surface of soil, where all your roots are for that tomato, it's possible that during one warm day, that soil is going to dry out down to 4 or 5 inches deep, waiting and wanting for moisture. So there's a lot more fluctuation of wet and dry in soil than there is in the straw bales. Straw bales get wet, and once they're nice and soaking wet, they're like a sponge. The inside, the outside feels dry, but the inside will stay nice and moist.
Samantha in Arcadia, we'll give you a chance now. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi, Samantha. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I was just wondering, have you heard about, I know for like, that's for composting and stuff, but I've seen it where, you know, people said you can use like urine, you know, human urine to put on it. They'll keep the nitrogen and nutrients in there. Is that whole true? And do you know anything about that? And I'll take my answer off.
Off the air. Okay.
Oh, boy, we're going down that path already, huh, Larry? Yeah, you know, human urine has about 12%, give or take 1%, about 12% nitrogen in it, kind of depending on what the person's diet consists of. And it is sterile. It makes us wrinkle our nose a little bit in Western countries like here in the United States, because it's not a common thing, and to some people, they think it's gross. Certainly, you can't use feces for this, but urine, you can actually use urine, believe it or not. Now, you're going to smell some evaporation, and that is ammonia that's volatilizing, and that's a little bit of nitrogen that's going to gas off of your bales. Remember, nitrogen is normally a gas form, so it's going to evaporate a little bit of nitrogen, but it will condition your bales. It takes about 3.5 gallons per bale, however, and you have to put that on consistently over a period of about 10 days, 10 or 12 days, keeping that bale. I like to water it first with a gallon and then add that half a gallon or so of urine over the whole bale. And that will feed the bacteria, and it will grow them. Now, there's not a lot of people here in the United States that are using that method for some logistical reasons. You know, it's just more difficult. But in countries, in particularly in Asia, I have a big project in the Philippines, a very urban project, and there they just don't have access to refined nitrogen sources. You can't go down to a garden center and buy a bag of urea or, you know, a bag of ammonium nitrate or even an organic source. You can't get a bag of blood meal over there. So they don't have another source, and they're, you know, very economically challenged. So this is a really great alternative for them, is to use urine. And many of these people are living in situations where they don't have indoor plumbing anyway. So they're collecting their urine anyway. And it's very easy for them to do that. Come out in the morning and put that on the bale and again in the evening. And those bales in the tropical climate over there, they condition very rapidly. You get a buildup of that bacteria inside the bale. Now, your plants aren't going to have any, they aren't going to take up urine. You know, you need to understand there's some chemistry here that's happening. And that's strictly what we're looking for in that urine, is the nitrogen molecules, you know, the ions inside of that urine that are going to become absorbed through the roots and become cells in that new plant. It's not going to be urine in your tomatoes or anything like that. So just so people understand that.
Let's go to Robin in Portage next. Hi, Robin. Thank you for calling.
Oh, and thank you for taking my call, you guys.
Sure.
Hi, Robin.
I missed the very beginning, and I really wanted to listen to this program because I've never done this before. How much nitrogen, and is there a special product you're supposed to buy that has nitrogen that you put in the hay bale?
Well, you're just going to use regular old source of nitrogen like lawn fertilizer if you're a traditional gardener. If you're an organic gardener, I highly recommend blood meal. We do have a brand new product, actually, that we just came out with called Bale Buster, which is there's an organic formula, and there's also a traditional, you know, refined fertilizer formula. So it kind of depends on what your theory about gardening is. Either one of those will work just fine. And you're going to end up using there's a chemical ratio that we need here. We're trying to get that bale to a 20-to-1 carbon to nitrogen ratio. That's ideal for decomposition. Now, if you start out with a bale of oat straw versus a bale of wheat straw versus a bale of alfalfa or grass hay, or, you know, depending on what the source is, you're going to need a different amount of nitrogen injected into that bale in order to get that ratio down to 20 to 1. In the books and in my recipes, I give you sort of a standard recipe, and this will work. Basically, what I did is I took a bale of oat straw and a bale of wheat straw and split the difference. And so you end up using about a little over a pound of active, actual nitrogen. Now, to get to that, it depends on the concentration of the fertilizer that you're using. If you're using regular old lawn fertilizer and it has 20% nitrogen, you're going to end up using 2 1/4 cups per bale over that period of 12 days. If you're using blood meal that only has 12% nitrogen, you're going to use, you know, almost double that amount. So it kind of depends on how much nitrogen your fertilizer has in it. This is really simple math, but for sometimes, you know, when you're first exposed to it, it can sound complicated and difficult. I'd get your hands on a copy of one of my books or go to the library and check one out. And, you know, then you'll have the exact recipe of how to do it. But it's really simple. Once you get the nitrogen on there, just make sure you use enough. That's the important thing, or your plants will be yellow when you first plant them.
There you go.
Are they, is it 2 1/4 cups over how many days?
Over that 10 days, yep.
10 days. And then I've got two other short questions. How many tomato plants can you put in one bale?
There's a lot of people in this audience asking that same question in their head because it's a very common question I get. And it depends. My answer, again, it depends. If you're doing the small heirloom style tomatoes that are only going to give you, you know, 12 tomatoes per plant, they're only going to get 4.5 or 5 feet tall at the tallest, you could get two of those comfortably in a bale. And then you could put some basil and other things in the side. You know, you could do some things in the sides of the bale as well. If you're doing a hybrid tomato, one of those that gets 8 feet tall and 8 feet wide and grows 100 tomatoes, you're really only going to fit one of those in a bale. And you might not want to put one on the bale to the right of it or the bale to the left of it, because that tomato plant is going to get so big and it's going to have so many tomatoes that it's going to take over the airspace above that entire bale up on the trellis, and then it's going to go right and left of that bale as well. So, you know, be cautious about putting them too close together, because you'll end up with the same number of tomatoes anyway. It'll just take you more plants, and, you know, you're going to end up having more inputs.
Mm-hmm. Also, can you grow bush beans in bales?
Yes, bush beans or pole beans. You'll be sick and tired of picking beans by the end of the year. They grow so well. Yeah, you'll have great luck with beans in general, all varieties of beans.
Yeah, there we go. All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Joel Karsten, our guest today, talking with us about the straw bale gardening method that he pioneered. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at straw bale gardening today with our guest, Joel Karsten, graduate from the University of Minnesota, has a Bachelor of Science degree in Horticulture Science and written a number of best-selling books on the straw bale gardening method that he pioneered. I think his latest is called Straw Bale Solutions. There we go. Got that right, didn't I, Joel?
That's right. Straw Bale Solutions. That's correct.
And your other books, Straw Bale Gardening, of course.
Right. Straw Bale Gardening was my first book that was self-published. And then I did Straw Bale Gardens. And then we did Straw Bale Gardens Complete, because apparently we left some stuff out of the first one. and now it's Straw Bale Solutions, which is kind of a whole different direction. There's a little bit of how-to in this book, but the focus of the book is really on people. It's on people who are gardeners around the world and how they've used the straw bale gardening method to solve a problem that they couldn't solve with traditional soil gardening methods. So we go all over the world, and it's deep. It goes pretty deep profile into each of these particular people. I think it's more interesting myself when I read a book about gardening to learn about the people and then about their garden, rather than them they just tell me about a garden. You know, I really don't care about the garden until I know who's the gardener and why they did things the way they did it. So
I haven't gotten a copy of that yet, so I've got to get my hands.
I haven't gotten a copy either.
No.
it's not on the ground yet. As a matter of fact, it's supposed to deliver this week from the printer. So we're this week it was supposed to arrive at our warehouse. So hopefully there should be books in the office by Monday. So.
Ah. David in Appleton has something for us. David, hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
I was just going to offer, my wife and I have done the straw bale garden several times, and we've had mixed success, and, you know, I think there are a couple different reasons for either the success or less than success with those. But what I was just going to offer up is after the last season we did it, which was before last, so a year and a half ago, we tried potatoes for the second time, and just it was so disappointing. But what I was going to offer is we used what was left of all the straw bales from our garden, mixed with compost that we've made at home, and peat moss to put together a potato area for last season, and it was fabulous. Just the yield was great. The plants were really healthy. It was easy to work, and we really credit the, you know, partly degraded straw bales for that. It was a real loose sort of medium, and clearly a lot of nutrients, and we supplemented it. But we had great success with that, and I just wanted to offer that up.
You know, David,
thanks a lot.
Yeah, David, I've got straw left over, you know, from my straw bales, and I'm planning to do the same thing. I did that last year too, and had good luck.
Yeah, it definitely works.
It was great.
Yeah. Thanks, David.
Yep.
Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, appreciate your call.
Yeah. I know the bales, yeah. Larry, initially in the beginning of the season when you put that conditioning nitrogen on and you start that process, one of the things that people should know is that the inside of these bales is going to get really warm during that time. You can put your hand down in there and you can feel a huge temperature spike, sometimes up to 140 or 145 degrees in that bale as it begins to decompose. And planting, particularly potatoes, which are going to be planted down deep inside that bale, if you plant those before that bale has completely cooled, so you plant a little bit too early. And potatoes, normally we plant early. You know, that's a crop that usually we try to get in the ground fairly early. But if you plant them at that same time in the bales, you're going to have potato soup by the next day because the inside of that bale will literally cook that potato. And then you don't get very good performance, obviously, out of that potato. Sometimes you don't get a crop at all because of that. But if you let it cool for a couple of extra weeks and then drop that potato down inside the bale, make a hole, drop it down inside there so you get it real deep. Like if it's an 18-inch tall bale, you want to get it 15 inches down in that bale. Leave that hole open. Don't fill it in with anything. That'll grow a long stem out of that bale. And then you can kind of push the bale around the stem once it reaches the top. And that whole stem will produce chits, which is where your potatoes grow off that long stem. And that'll give you the best potato production out of a straw bale garden.
Very cool. Now we go to Nancy in Mosinee, I believe. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Nancy. Hello. Love your show. I've been meaning to call every time you're talking straw bale gardening. Just a couple comments. My son gave me a book about 4 or 5 years ago. He said, "You're aging, Mom. Here's an easier way to garden." I have raised beds. Anyway, we started that year with 10 bales. The next year went to 20, and we are now at 30, and just has been one of the most interesting experiences in all my years of gardening. 2 years ago, we were asked to be part of the Central Wisconsin Master Gardener Walk, and we had over 400 people visit the gardens that we have, and they were just awed by the straw bale gardening. And I think if I would have had Joel's books, I could have sold a couple cases that day. So just a comment. It's just a easy, interesting experience with straw bale gardening.
Oh, thank you
so much. That's very, very nice of you to call. I'll send you your check later. Don't worry.
that's great. So yeah. 30, 40 bales.
Yeah.
That's a lot of bales.
That's what I hear often from people. And one of the reasons why straw bale gardening has spread as quickly as it has is because it is so conspicuous.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a regular garden and people will walk by and they won't really pay much attention for a long time. But you put a few bales of straw in your yard and your neighbors are going to ask questions and your friends that come by are going to say, are you raising goats in the backyard or what are you doing? And so it starts a conversation, and that conversation always leads to you as the straw bale gardener becoming a teacher. You know, you need to explain how this works and why it works, and that spreads the method. Yeah. You know, it goes from son to parent, like in this situation, and it will also often go the opposite direction, which is a very interesting phenomenon that we've discovered, is oftentimes I'll get a 60, 70, I haven't, several gardeners in their 90s. I know that's hard to believe, yeah. But I have a guy in Chicago, was in the Chicago Tribune last fall, that's in his 90s. He's a World War II veteran, World War II veteran. He lives at an assisted living place facility, and he has a garden there, a straw bale garden at the assisted living facility. So you can be much older and do this successfully. And then what ends up happening is they learn about it, and then they start teaching their kids or their grandkids. And that reverse situation is very unique in most places in today's world. Yeah. You know, it's usually the kids teaching the parents of new technology and all this kind of stuff. You know, you're always teaching the parents or the grandparents. When it goes the opposite direction, it's just inspiring to see that happen. And it really is a spark, you know, for these people that maybe they haven't gardened in 10 years and all of a sudden they're back out in the garden and it's getting them outside during the day. And, you know, they're growing fresh produce. I mean, who doesn't love that, right? It's super healthy. And it's just sort of a phenomenon that straw bale gardening has created.
Larry in Rice Lake, your turn. Thanks for calling, Larry. What can we do for you?
Good morning, Larry and Joel.
Hi.
This summer will be my third year straw bale gardening, and I actually started just because of reading some articles, but also listening to the Larry Mueller Show talking about it. And I believe, Joel, you might have been on the show several years ago when my interest kept climbing, and I bought the book Straw Bale Gardens Complete. And started out, and I read it very thoroughly. Started out my first year with 8 bales, second year with 16. like a couple callers back, I've had mixed success, and it seems pretty straightforward how it's laid out in the book. And so, give you a quick snapshot of how I do it, and compared to the book, and maybe you can give me some ideas to improve my success. The initial treatments with the nitrogen are very straightforward. I wait till the process is complete. The bales have heated up and cooled down a little bit. You know, wait another couple days, and then I'll put some pepper, tomato plants, some of the live plants in. Then I'll spread out some good quality potting soil and kind of pack it down a little bit and plant some peas and some green beans. Some radishes, and kind of water everything lightly, just keep everything damp. And so, first of all, with like the radishes, everything will come up, and the green beans as well, they come up practically overnight. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but they come up like twice as fast as they would in your cold ground that time of the year. And then I send out the radishes, send everything out, and then they don't seem to, they kind of seem to stagnate for a while. Then I decide, I kind of look at the book, should I fertilize, should I wait? So I've actually tried different bales with fertilizer on one schedule and less or more fertilizer on another schedule. And sometimes, like, the radishes will just make plants, they'll get a little bigger, but the root will just kind of be a white root going down through the dirt into the bale, but it never gets a radish on it. And then the green beans and or peas, they go from that green. I know yellow is bad, and I know if you fertilize too much, then it's not good as well.
Right. Well, let me see if I can help you out a little bit. With the seeds that are bigger, like about the size of your pinky, the end of your pinky finger, like peas and beans, those have big seeds. You really don't even need that potting mix at all. So I know it says in the book to use the potting mix, but when you get those bigger seeds like that, you can just literally take those and use the end of your finger and push them down until you get two knuckles deep right into the bale. And part of what causes the problem is when those roots have to go from one type of condition, which is your potting mix on the top, into that more coarse condition, which is the bale down below. It's hard for them to make that transition down into the bale. So when you plant your seeds from your radish and other things, the tinier seeds, those you have to have some kind of a seed bedder. They would fall way down into the bale because they're so small. Carrots, I'm talking about, things like that. You need to put just a super thin layer on top of the bale and really pack that down as hard as you can so that when that seed germinates, the root is actually going to germinate and go down into the bale rather than trying to stay and have all of its production in that little half an inch or 1 inch layer of potting mix at the top. Remember, the potting mix is just there to hold the seed until it germinates. It's not really there to support life for any length of time. And those little white roots that you're talking about, those will shoot down into the bale. It's real easy for them to grow deep down into the bale, where if they're all trapped in that little surface on the top, in that layer of potting mix, they don't get down into the bale. That ends up being the problem. So, and if your bales are too tight, that could be a problem also. Sometimes people will buy bales from farmers and, geez, these bales are just compressed really tight. Great solution, put a new string around that bale, tie it up, you know, a little bit loosely, and cut the old strings and let it expand just a little bit. And then it makes it easier for water to get down in the bale and easier for those roots to go down into the bale as well.
Okay, so how about plants like, we'll just talk about green pepper plants, and I'll put them in sometimes, I'll tie up four or five bales because we really like a lot of peppers, and again, they transplant well, they look good for the first few weeks, and start to grow pretty good leafage, and I'll do maybe one fertilizing, then they'll start getting, you know, at some point the flowers, and then and that's where it seems to go on hold. The flowers, you know, seem to do their thing. They wither away, but they don't really produce green peppers. They're just little miniature green peppers. It's like, come on, keep growing. No, get bigger, bigger. But that's, and then sometimes they just stay there. And I really can't pin down how much to fertilize once you've got your plants established.
You know, as long as you're not overwatering the bales, which is going to leach nitrogen out, you don't really need to do much for fertilizer at all, to tell you the truth. So if you put too much fertilizer on, particularly on tomatoes and peppers, you'll get lots of leaf growth, foliage growth, but you won't get as heavy of a fruit set. So that's a very common problem in traditional soil as well, is too much nitrogen. So I would encourage you, Don't use any additional fertilizer or a very small amount until those plants really start to tell you they need it. And try to reduce your water a little bit too. With peppers in particular, they don't need nearly as much water as you'd think they would, especially when they're young plants. Probably, you know, if you're adding more than 5 minutes worth of water once a week early in the season until the heat really starts to come, that heat of late June and early July, then you might need to water a little bit more often. But a gallon a week is probably going to be plenty for those peppers.
There you go.
Right. It sounds like I could be overwatering. I'm putting about a gallon of water per bale, like you guys talked about, but I was probably doing it every other day in the middle of June if it's pretty warm out, and that sounds like it's maybe a little bit excessive.
Yeah, and the plants will communicate. They'll wilt. You know, they'll droop a little bit if they need water. So don't be afraid of that.
Yeah, don't be afraid of that. I've had good luck with my peppers. That's one of the shining positive results from my straw bale garden are my peppers.
I hear that from people a lot. Peppers, tomatoes, and cucumbers, you can't go wrong. But on occasion, you know, there's some reason why. And peppers can be kind of fickle too. You know, from year to year, the weather can affect them significantly. This year you'll put them in and you'll probably have the best crop of peppers you've ever seen. So
there you go, Larry. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yep.
Thanks, Larry.
Yeah, appreciate it. Let's go to Jan in Madison next. Hi, Jan. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Jan.
Hi there. Hi. I've never done this, and I'm just listening to you for the first time,
trying to figure out how I can do it in my yard that has very little shade. But my one question is, I have a sister who is a horse person, and they sometimes will throw out bales of hay that are moldy, that they can't feed to their horses.
Not anymore. Yeah.
Can I use one of those?
Absolutely. That'll work perfectly for us. Yeah. A bale of hay, moldy hay, with fungi growing on it, that's perfectly fine for our purposes. Absolutely. So tell her to start keeping those, and you'll use them for your straw bale garden. Yeah, it doesn't have to be straw, necessarily. We have people in different parts of the world, they use sugarcane stalk, they use chopped up palm tree fronds, ground up palm tree fronds, any kind of an organic material with a very fine texture that will quickly and easily decompose. That's really what we're after, because what we're making here is soil. And everything becomes soil at some point in the future. Even us, believe it or not, will become soil someday. So all you're going to do is use that hay versus a bale of straw. Hay actually has a little more nitrogen in it, so you'll see that helps. It decomposes more quickly. The downside of hay is you probably will never get a second year out of those bales, because they're really going to collapse in a hurry with the hay bale, because it decomposes so quickly.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
The other question I had was, we live in a wooded area, and we have some limited sunshine.
Okay.
But we do have sun right around our house, and we have a substantial deck. If I put the hay bale on the deck, is that going to compromise the wood on my deck?
Yeah, I'd be a little careful about that. I don't want to have to come and help you restain your deck. So put down a mat underneath. If you go to a box store, you can get these livestock mats, they're called, that the farmers put in the pen. Your sister with the horses will know exactly what I'm talking about.
One of these livestock mats.
Put that down underneath it. That'll keep the contact, and it still lets air flow underneath that mat. So that'll be perfect for you.
There you go.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
I thought she was going to talk about being next to the woods, about having black walnut trees, because that's a common problem in Wisconsin, is people dealing with the juglans in the soil, which is from black walnut trees. And straw bale gardening provides a really great alternative for that. So if you have a garden, or you want to have a garden, but you have black walnut trees in your yard, this is a new way you can actually grow something in your yard. So try a straw bale garden over the top of that root field.
There you go. Joel Karsten, our guest today. We talk with him about straw bale gardening. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Joel Karsten, author of several books on straw bale gardening. And it's great talking with him once again. It's been a while, and it's always great to have him come by and talk with us about how you could bale our garden with straw bales. Questions for him, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And we're going to go to Bill next in Columbus. Bill, thank you for calling.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, I've been straw baling for about 3 years now, and you know that from experience, regulating the temperature with the plastic tents is very important to keeping the plants healthy in the early stages. But I took a job where I'll be gone for a week and then home for a week. So I've got the automatic watering system set up, and I've got the three tiers of wires set up for the different levels of the plastic. How do I manage the plants in the early stages of the garden when I won't be home for a week?
Here's what I would suggest, is to take the plastic off and instead put on floating row cover. And if you go online and look it up, or go to your favorite garden center, you got to go to a garden center that carries a lot of different inventory, you'll find row cover cloth. And this is a opaque fabric that's used for insulation, and it's often used in commercial applications for covering row vegetable crops. And replace the plastic with that. Now, here's the reason, is because if you leave those plants covered with a plastic cover on a bright sunny day, even though the temperature only gets up to 60, 65 degrees, underneath that plastic cover, that polyethylene film, it can get really, really hot under there in that little greenhouse that you've created. So you're going to lose more plants. I get more emails from people that lose plants because they're covered with plastic because they got too hot than they got too cold. And the reason we're putting those covers on, of course, is to keep them from getting too cold at night. So switch those out, and I think that will solve your problem. Now, if you don't get them uncovered, it's not a big deal because that floating row cover won't cook them like plastic will.
Okay, thank you kindly.
Yeah,
you betcha.
Thanks very much for calling. And Marion Wales emailed to say that she has very rocky soil. Should she apply a tarp or cardboard under the bales, or does that matter?
It doesn't matter at all. As a matter of fact, you could do it on concrete if you want to, or asphalt. We have a lot of gardens people will do in a parking lot or on a rooftop. So what's underneath is really completely irrelevant, and her rocky soil, she'll be just fine. So just put the bales right on top of that, as long as it's somewhat level so the bales don't tip over. That's really the only important thing.
And Jack on Facebook says he has about 2 acres in Sand County and Sand Country to garden. Does your new book cover big gardens or putting bales in the ground? The soil dries quickly.
Well, yeah, actually, there's a whole story about a guy just outside of Nashville that has 1,000 bales in his garden, and it's on top of a rocky area that he can't really grow anything in. So he puts the bales out, and he has a commercial operation. So he has people come in. It's a you-pick vegetable garden all summer. And then he has a pumpkin and apple farm in the fall, and like an adventure farm. He brings all these kids out from Nashville schools. So he pushes all those bales into a big pile in the fall to compost, and he uses that space for a parking lot. As soon as that season is over in the fall, he puts new bales out there, lines them up. Next summer, he's got a garden in the same spot. So yeah, on a mass scale, there are lots of people doing this. You got to be ready, though. It's a lot of, you know, you plant 1,000 bales worth of vegetables. He had 33 bales, this Jason Ladd at Lucky Ladd Farms last year, 33 bales of green beans, and they picked 200 5-gallon pails of green beans. So you got to be ready for a lot of labor if you're going to plant out that many bales. But yeah, people scale this up to a very large scale, and then I'll have other people that use one bale on their patio, and they love it. They have success. So it really doesn't matter how many you use. You know, 5 bales per person in your household. If you plant that 5 bales, you will not be able to eat all the produce that those 5 bales per person will generate in your garden.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Betty in La Crescent, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Hi there.
Hi, Betty.
I just kind of caught the tail end of this while we were doing chores here in the barn. We always, every year, have some hay that isn't suitable for feeding. I was curious, when you plant in a small square bale, we'd be using hay, do you plant on the cut edge of the bale?
Yes.
Or on the,
the flat edge, yeah.
Yes, we like to have...
Can you answer that question?
That's right, yes. For all the farm kids in the audience, all the farm kids are going to know there's a cut edge and a folded end to a straw bale. And we want to try to keep that cut end facing upwards. And that's the side we're going to get the water to go in and get the fertilizer to go in. And when we go to plant, that's the end we're going to plant in. You can do the other end. It's not a deal breaker, but it's just much easier if you use the cut side of the bale. Put the cut side up. And then remember, you're going to plant the sides too. So if you've got some bedding plants, you want to put, you know, basil or oregano or something in the side of the bale. And you can also put flowers in the side of the bale. So if you want to dress it up, make it look pretty, you can do that as well.
Huh. Then my other question was, what about round bales?
You know, round bales will work. There are several people that have done them. They're hard to manage, you know, but if you're on a farm situation, you've got a tractor, you can move them around. Here's the key with a round bale. You need to cut it in half. Now, I know what you're saying. Oh, my gosh, that sounds hard. It's really easy. You use a chainsaw. I always suggest you borrow your neighbor's chainsaw because it's going to gum it up a little bit. But you're going to use a chainsaw, and you're going to cut around. Just roll that bale forward and keep cutting. So you're going to make a slice all the way through the middle of that bale and then let it flop to the side. So you have two donut shapes, but they'll be half as tall. That's really what we're after, because if it's too tall, you're going to see it's really hard to keep that whole bale moist. And keeping the bale consistently moist is really important. It also gets really hard to harvest tomatoes if they're 19 feet in the air up on top of that straw bale. So, cut the bales in half. It sounds like it's really difficult to do. There's actually a YouTube video of a woman in Wisconsin who demonstrates how to do this.
Cutting a bale in half.
We did it with a straw bale. We were trying to flake out. It is really hard on the saw and on the operator of the saw.
Yeah, it gets a little dusty.
It could be done. Okay, well, those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, Betty. Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Scott in Winona, Minnesota next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, I've never done this type of gardening in our yard. We have a very shaded backyard, mm-hmm. but we have an area along our driveway goes all the way to the backyard. So along the driveway, along the fence line, it does get sun. Could we put these bales on the hard surface of the driveway? And also, if we can, which book would you recommend for the beginner?
Yes, you can put them right on the driveway. That won't be a problem at all. As a matter of fact, there's some pictures in the book of people that have them on the driveway. And the book you want is the Complete, Straw Bale Gardens Complete. That's the most in-depth in terms of how-to.
Okay.
Solutions, the new book, is got a little how-to, but it's mainly inspirational stories and sort of shows you people examples of, you might think you have a problem that you can't solve with traditional gardening, and this book will show you how it doesn't matter where you go on planet Earth, you can make straw bale gardening work as a solution for your gardening application. So,
all right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Good luck to you.
Yeah, good luck. Appreciate the call. Melissa emailed to ask if the plants need soil at all or is straw enough. Also, how long does she have to wait for the bale to be ready?
Well, Melissa, that's the misconception, is people think you're growing in straw. And remember, in the beginning, we talked about you're not really growing in straw. You're growing in decomposed straw. And decomposed straw is really fundamentally, it's the beginning stages of soil. So it is soil that you're growing in. All soil that you see, especially good growing soil, the nice black rich humus, has a really high percentage of organic matter, which means decomposed organic material. And then some minerals as well mixed together. But the plants will grow just as well in these decomposing bales as they will in soil. You don't need to add any soil at all. As a matter of fact, soil is going to have weed seeds in it. And one of our big reasons we straw bale garden is because there's no weeding, right,
no
Larry?
No weeds. I love that part of it.
That's right. So, yeah, if you add a shovel of soil on top of these bales, now you're just soil gardening up in the air is really what you're doing. And you're going to have weed problems, and some disease potentially could come with that shovel of soil, leftover spores that harbor in soil, insect problems, that kind of thing. You know, you get up in the air and you get this fresh soil, this virgin soil inside the bale, and that eliminates and solves a lot of those insect disease, weed problems that we normally deal with in a garden.
Luann in Elkhorn, your turn now. Hi, Luann.
Hi, Luann.
Hi, guys. I've got a question I've been thinking about for a couple of years. When you do straw bale gardening, are the vegetables as nutritious as if they were grown in the ground?
Yes, they are. They're exactly the same. Especially with consistency of moisture, sometimes the Brix scale tests are even higher with the straw bale garden. So, yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful.
I know it seems like, how are you growing in straw? How can that be? You got to understand what's happening here is these bacteria are metabolizing the cells of that wheat plant or oats plant or whatever that bale's made of. And last year, Mother Nature grew that oats plant. She took from the soil things that we would recognize, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, molybdenum, zinc, calcium, and grew the plant. Well, those molecules don't disappear. They're still there. We're just decomposing them to get them back into ions, which are super tiny little charged particles of things like you would recognize NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, molybdenum, zinc, calcium, iron, and now those little tiny ions are reabsorbed through the roots and back up into a new plant. So what last year was an oats plant, the same molecule, the same ion, now this year becomes a tomato plant. Next year it could become something else, you know. It could be a it could become a pine tree for 100 years and then drops over and decomposes, and now that ion's available again and it becomes something else. So it's just recycling the same things. Yep. It's really some basic biology that's happening here. And you know, people think we invented recycling. Mother Nature's been recycling the same molecules over and over for eons and eons. And that's really what she's doing here, is she's recycling those ions that are trapped inside the molecules, inside the cells, inside the wheat plant, and decomposing those and making them available for a new plant.
Wow, thank you. I learned a whole lot of new stuff.
There you go, Luann.
Oftentimes, Larry, I get questions from people that have celiac disease, you know, an allergy to gluten, and they're wondering, gardening in a bale of wheat or oats, is that going to affect me? And it really doesn't at all, because what they need to understand is that it's not absorbing the wheat. It's absorbing the ion of phosphorus or nitrogen or potassium that was inside of that wheat. So everything becomes elemental once again, and then gets reabsorbed and builds whole new cells, which build entirely new plants, which build entirely new structures inside those plants. So really, if you have celiac disease, you know, if a wheat were to sprout out of your bale and, you know, you were to eat the seeds off of that wheat that sprouted, then you might have your allergy might act up. But the produce you grow is not going to have gluten in the produce because it was grown in a bale of wheat or straw.
And there's been research on the nutritional value of it.
Yes. Yes, and it's absolutely identical. Or the BRICS tests, which is measure the level of sugars, essentially, inside of something like a tomato plant, for instance, can actually show up higher in by comparison. Now, it's all relative because, you know, what kind of soil were you growing in compared to the straw bales? You know,
sure.
I could cook the books, as they say, and make it sound good. But, you know, you'll tell just by eating the produce that it tastes just the same or better.
Yeah, there we go. Joel Karsten, our guest today. Joel has been working with straw bales for a long, long time, about 30 years. His latest book, Straw Bale Solutions, his other latest book, Straw Bale Garden Complete. Larry Mueller for Garden Talk. Great to have you along today for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Joel Karsten, been working on the straw bales for a long, long time. He has a number of best-selling books on the topic. His latest is called Straw Bale Solutions. If you're more interested in the nuts and bolts of it, probably go to his other book, Straw Bale Garden Complete. Always fun to have him come by. And you may have questions about straw bale gardening, or you may have experiences to share. And I hope you'll join in either case. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post your photos or your questions as well on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And Joel, we have callers online, so we'll go right back to the phones and to Ruth and Nina next, and then on to Don. But first, Ruth. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Ruth.
Hi there, guys. I love the straw bale gardening. I've been doing it for 2 years. We got the complete book. But I'm having trouble with strawberries, and I don't know if I need a different variety or if I should leave them for the second year. What am I doing wrong?
You really need to let strawberries for two seasons. The second season is when you're going to get the majority of your production. First year, they're really just establishing roots, and you might get a few berries here and there, but nothing really to write home about.
Yeah, nothing
to write home about. But if you leave them until the second season, now I know that those bales are going to shrink, and you're going to have to bend over again to harvest them, which is the bummer. But that's when you'll really start to see lots of production. And I would encourage you in the fall of the year to try and cover those berries. Maybe you've got a half a bale of straw somewhere. You can kind of fluff it up and put over the top in the fall. Once it freezes a little bit out, then cover it up. It's really about the freeze and thaw cycle. It's not that berries will get too cold. Strawberries will get too cold. They can handle the cold. What they can't handle is the cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, like it is in the fall and in the spring of the year. So once they get cold, then cover them up about Thanksgiving or so, and then uncover them early in the spring, usually a little before Easter. Make sure they're uncovered well in April sometime. And then they'll be fine. They'll start to come back. And you'll see that second year, you'll get a ton of runners from them. And now you're going to have a whole strawberry patch right where that bale is starting to decompose.
Put it at the end.
Exactly. So you're going to have a ton of berries that second year. But I think that's really what you're missing is that berries really are a two-year before you're okay. Really going to get much
production. So the first year, should I be pinching those blossoms as well?
You can, you know, it's kind of, some people are convinced that you have to pinch everything, but you know, I'll harvest a few berries the first year and then the second year the plants do just fine. So.
Okay. And that ground cover that you mentioned earlier, would that work as well? Or just use the existing straw bale and just kind of pack it up around the top to cover it for winter?
I would recommend some fresh straw so it has air in it. You know, it's really the air that's insulating. So just a half a bale or quarter of a bale of fresh straw and fluff it up a little bit over top. Or leaves will work too. You know, if you've got some dry leaves, that works well.
All right. We'll try them again. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Now on to Don in Monaco, Wisconsin, I believe. Hi, Don.
Hey, Don.
Hi. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Well, I thank you for taking it. You know, a number of years ago, Larry, on one of your garden shows, you had a caller from northern Wisconsin mention that they grew their potatoes just in piles of pine needles that they gathered together, and it seemed to work pretty well for them. So my question was, when your guest mentioned that you could use different types of media rather than just straw bales or hay bales, is there any way to condition that sort of material and maybe adjust the pH? I realize that they're a little acidic. So I have a number of friends that garden up north, and they always get caught in a short season, and it seems like a way to extend their season if they can. So if you know anything about that, I'd appreciate you passing it along, and I'm just going to hang up and take your call off the air, and thank you again for taking it.
Thank you, Don.
Yeah, thanks for your call, Don. You can't make a bale entirely out of pine needles because it will be too acidic. You know, if you wanted to go grow blueberries, you might be all right. But I would really recommend that you mix in other materials. So if they have leaves, just regular leaves and grass clippings and some pine needles, maybe a quarter of the bale can be made out of pine needles. Mix that all together, and then you're going to make your own bales. And that you don't have to have a baling machine attached to a tractor. You can just get a great big giant Rubbermaid bin. So I always tell people, go in the basement, dump all your Christmas ornaments out, and bring that big bin upstairs, and you're going to pack that thing full of this organic material, whatever you've got. You know, some tulip poles and some lilac prunings and some, you know, your leftover Valentine's Day flowers. Throw it all in this bucket. Get up on top. Really pack it down as tightly as you can. I like people to fill that bucket with water and just put a rock on top of it, let it sit overnight. And now you take that, pull that bucket where you want to have it, where you want to have your garden, and dump it out. It's going to make this square cube. But you can't just plant right in that cube. First, you need to wrap some chicken wire around that cube. Wrap the chicken wire around it, staple it onto a piece of wood like a 2x2, and then twist the 2x2 to tighten it up around that bale. And that's a great way to make homemade bales. We actually show how to do this in my book. So it's a simple way to do it. And you basically have bales for free. And in terms of extending the season, you are right on target with that. That's exactly what this will do for them. The colder the climate, the more benefit you get from straw bale gardening. So I have people up north of the Arctic Circle. They're 200 miles north of the Arctic Circle. There's a woman, she has a show on National Geographic Channel, or she's on a show on the National Geographic Channel, which I don't watch, but apparently she has her poly house up there, and she's growing a straw bale garden, and she starts it inside that poly house. So that's as far north as I've ever heard anybody using. But lots of people in Alaska love it, Norway, you know, anywhere where it's a pretty cold climate. And Wisconsin and Minnesota, I mean, northern yeah. Minnesota, we have tons of people that love it. And in the Upper of Michigan, I have lots of fans up there that love straw bale gardening. Because if you can get 2 extra weeks, and you know this, Larry,
yeah.
early in the season, if you can plant 2 weeks early and you get 2 weeks of April and May and June, you get 2 weeks of June sun, it's equal to 6 weeks of September sun in terms of yeah. intensity. And it really lets you beat Mother Nature at her own game. I tell people it's kind of like we're gardening maybe in Kansas City when we're in Minneapolis here, because we're able to extend that season by, you know, 4 weeks or so. And that really makes a significant impact.
Joan in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Joan.
Oh, good morning. Or afternoon, I guess it is. I'd like to know, I've never seen straw bales at our garden centers, unless I've missed them, but where do you get these?
Well, you'd be really surprised when you become a straw bale gardener how many straw bales you'll see for sale, because you start looking for them. Most of your garden centers will have straw bales, not necessarily all year long, but they will have them especially in the fall. So don't be afraid to buy them in the fall and just put them right out in your garden. You're going to still do the conditioning process and everything in the spring, but you'll find two things. Number one, they're less expensive in the fall, and they're a lot easier to find because farmers have just taken them off of the field. People like to use them for fall decor, you know, for a Thanksgiving theme, Halloween theme around their property. Sometimes you'll find them in the weirdest places, you know, in a car dealer's parking lot. They'll have a nice display of straw bales with pumpkins and corn stalks and stuff. And if you go knock on the door, you'd be surprised how many people are like, oh, yeah, I got to pay some guy to come and get rid of those. So if you want them, you're welcome to take them once the season's over. People use them for insulation, you know, over top of drainage fields or around their foundation of their house or their garage or whatever for insulation purposes. Those are perfectly viable for a straw bale garden the next spring. So start to look around a little bit. If you get really desperate, we have a website called Straw Bale Market, and it's a free website. Farmers put ads with bales for sale, and people put ads, bales wanted, and we kind of try to partner people up. But it's a completely free website. You can visit there. You can also just simply go to Craigslist and do a search for straw bales. Lots of farmers will advertise on Craigslist that have straw bales for sale. And really, this, you know, look for rye or hay or farmers won't advertise moldy hay usually, but if they advertise hay, you could message them and say, do you have any moldy hay? Because that would work perfectly for your purposes.
There you go. And or if you forget to do that in the fall, you can go in the spring, and I know our local garden centers have them available. Probably
oh, sure.
They're going to cost a little more, but
yep,
they're there. Let's go to Brian in Thorpe, Wisconsin next. Hi, Brian.
Hello. How are you guys doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
Hi. Thanks. So here's I'm gonna set up a beehive this year for honeybees, and I want to plant wildflowers around my property, a couple acres property. So I want some different wildflower beds, and was wondering, instead of tilling up the ground and planting all the wildflowers, could I set out a bunch of bales together and do them that way?
Sure. There's no reason you couldn't. In 3 years' time, those bales will have become part of your yard. They'll have become soil. You know, you have a little hump there, but, you know,
right,
as long as you
kind of want to.
Yeah. Yeah, that won't hurt anything at all. And it'll be a weed-free way to do it. Now, it's part of the problem with starting wildflowers from seed, I'll tell you from experience, is it is very difficult to tell what is a weed and what is one of your intended plants, your wildflowers. So you end up not being able to weed anything for the first, you know, 2-3 months until you start to get some leaf and some flower formation, and then you realize, well, this wasn't a flower at all, this was something else, and now you try to pull the root out and it's intermingled with the roots of the plants that you want to keep. So it's a difficult scenario, where with the straw bale garden, as long as you cover the top of those bales with a potting mix material that is weed free, and then put your good clean wildflower seeds in that surface, you'll have a 100% stand of wildflowers, which will make the establishing process a whole lot easier.
Okay. Sure. Yeah, because I was planning on doing a garden, you know, with the strawberry bales, and then I got to thinking, well, geez, I'm going to plant wildflowers. I'd like to do that, too. That'd be kind of nice.
Yeah, I grow lots of different flowers. I grow lots of flowers, and summer bulbs are another one that I like to grow, but that's because I like cut flowers. So gladiolus and dahlias and, you know, calla lilies and things like that, I'll plant in straw bales. And it makes it real easy to plant them. You get earlier growth and earlier flowers. They flower all summer, and when fall comes around, I kick the bale over and I collect all my bulbs and put them in storage over the winter until the following spring and repeat the process. Sunflowers. Okay. Sunflowers love straw bales. So put a couple of sunflower plants in, and they make, especially the midget ones, make really great cut flowers. So you can keep sunflowers on your table for 8 weeks during the summer by cutting your sunflowers all the time. Yeah.
And with the seeds on that now, if you're planting them from seed, which you will be, you talked earlier about seed contact and not getting too much soil, Joel, does that work with flowers or?
Yeah, well, yeah, with wildflowers, just a thin little layer of the potting mix, and then sprinkle the seeds down, and then you'll want to cover them up with just another thin layer, and then tamp it down. You've got a chunk of a 2x4 or something just to tamp it down and get good contact with the seed, and then just keep it moist and stand back, and you'll see, you know, a vegetable plant like a radish is going to produce the entire crop in about 30 days or 35 days. So they grow very quickly. They don't have time sometimes to get roots real deep into the bales, where those wildflowers are going to send roots deep. I mean, you're going to get roots will go all the way through that bale and probably into the soil below that bale by the second year for sure. Yeah, they get deep roots on them, a lot of varieties.
Now, I came to the show just a little bit late, but I heard the last caller talk about conditioning the bale. I mean, is that something I would have to do also, or do I just put that little bit of potting soil on it and go?
Yeah. No, you need to condition it. There's a process you go through. It's where you're going to add, you know, if you're using lawn fertilizer, it ends up being about 2 1/4 cups of nitrogen fertilizer with at least 20% in order to feed the bacteria. You know, we're not feeding the plants here. We're feeding bacteria, and bacteria love nitrogen. They're going to grow inside the bale, and then the bacteria will eat the straw and turn the straw into soil on the inside. So really, by the time you plant in 2 weeks after the conditioning has taken place, you're planting into virgin soil. It's still going to look like straw. Don't think it's going to look like soil. But it's biologically, it's started to have free ions available to be taken up through the roots of a new plant, which is really kind of the definition of what a soil media is. So you need to condition them. Yep.
Okay. Yep. I listen to Larry's show all the time, and I know I've heard it over and over again about conditioning. I just thought I'd ask about the wildflower too.
All right.
Yep.
All right.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Ken in Arborvita next. Hi, Ken.
Hey, Ken. Hi, Larry. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
Hey, I wanted to ask Joel. You know, I'm up here in the Northwoods. Well, I have like 3 months of growing season, and I planted last year. I planted serrano peppers and jalapeno peppers, and they grew absolutely great. The plants were great. I had a lot of fruit, you know, a lot of peppers. But when I picked the peppers, there was no heat in them. They weren't hot at all. The idea is.
Yeah, it could be a water issue. I don't know for sure. That's a good question. Is it a seed that you've grown consistently in the past and they've always been hot? Could just be a different variety. I mean, peppers are very fickle between varieties, the amount of heat, obviously.
Well, that could have been, but I just wondered because I started plants, and they grew great. I just wondered if maybe it was the growing season was too short, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. I know water has a big factor on hot peppers. You know, you don't want to overwater them because they get hotter if they grow in kind of a dry or a drought type condition. So
it may have been just too much water.
Yeah, that's a good question. I honestly can't give you
water less then.
Yeah, well, water less. Yeah, see what happens.
But I have to tell you that's kind of a guess because I'm not actually positive on that. So.
But again, as you were saying, let the plants tell you when they need to be watered.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with letting a plant have a slight wilt to it before you water. That's why they wilt. You know, they're going to give you that signal that, hey, I'm a little bit dry here and I need a little I'm a little thirsty and give them a little water. I like to use an indicator plant. I'll put an impatient flower on top of a bale that I can see out of the window. And if that impatient starts to droop, I know that the garden needs water or something's wrong. You know, my irrigation's not working or something's wrong, because an impatient will wilt right away as soon as it starts to get dry. So I call it my indicator plant. It tells me when I need the water.
There you go. Ken, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Harold in Hudson, Wisconsin. Hi, Harold.
Hi there, you guys. So I have a subtle variation on a call I think you've had before, which is about septoria, and straw bales are a great solution to avoid that problem. What I'm wondering is if I put the straw bale on contaminated soil, in other words, in my garden where I've had problems over the last 10 years trying to rotate and do all the things to avoid septoria, will the septoria come up through that straw bale in one season and contaminate the bale, or am I safe placing it on contaminated soil?
Yeah, you're perfectly safe. You won't have a problem with that at all. I would encourage you, however, to cover the soil around the bale with something, like a thin layer of compacted loose straw or landscape fabric or wood chips or something like that.
Sure.
Mainly because, sometimes we don't think about it, but we're pruning, we're pruning away on our tomato, pruning some suckers off, whatever, and we accidentally drop that pruning shears, and it hits the soil, and we pick it back up, and we go back to pruning. We just contaminated our plant. Because if you touch the soil and then touch the plant, that's where that problem is going to come from. Same thing with garden gloves.
I've experienced that because I have lots of land, so I thought, I'll just make a new garden, and I hauled black dirt, and I have big equipment and so forth, and I have a 5-foot rototiller, and I made this new garden, and then I used my contaminated rototiller to rototill the garden. It was a total waste of energy on my part.
Yeah, unfortunately. It happens with everybody. You walk across your contaminated garden, and then you use the same shoes and walk into your new plot where you planted, and it's real easy to spread those spores that quickly and that easily. People also, you come home with a tray of tomatoes, and you set them down in your garden, and they tip over, and they lay on the soil for, 10, 15 minutes. And then you tip them upright and plant them, and then you mulch around them real nice so they don't get any soil residue on the leaves, right? But the problem's already happened. As soon as that soil residue touches the foliage on a plant, it instantly introduces those spores. So much so that my grandma Josephine used to make us, when we go to the garden, she would have us scratch a bar of Ivory soap. So we get soap under our fingernails. And then we'd go to the garden, and we got all done. We would wash our hands to get the dirt out from under your fingernails, because she didn't want anybody with dirt under their fingernails touching her tomato plants, because that could easily spread disease to her tomatoes. So even garden gloves, anybody who uses garden gloves, I tell them, don't ever touch your tomato plants with garden gloves on, because undoubtedly you've got some spores embedded in those garden gloves, in the seams or whatever, and it's going to spread to the plant.
There you go. Harold, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Colleen on Facebook wondered if you could grow a pumpkin in straw bales, and if she gets the straw this spring, can she plant them right away?
Yes, you absolutely can grow pumpkins, but it's very difficult if you're growing, one pumpkin is going to give you 10, 25-pound pumpkins. How do you hold them up if you try to put them up on the trellis? So you're going to still have a pumpkin field next to the bales. So be prepared for that. And two years ago, I had a pumpkin vine that got 91 feet long from tip to tail. So, it goes all the way around the garden and back to the beginning. So you get a ton of foliage there. So be prepared for that. You got to have enough space to allow that to happen. Now, it kind of depends on the variety of pumpkin that you choose, but absolutely, they love it. As do other varieties of squash. They love the straw bale gardens. If you do put them up on the trellis, you should figure out a way to support those fruits once you start to see that pumpkin or that squash develop, some way to support it, because otherwise as it gets more and more mature, it'll break off maybe before it gets completely mature.
And what's your website, by the way, Joel? Give us that.
Strawbalegardens.com. So it's real easy to find.
Strawbalegardens.com. And your book, the how-to book, is Straw Bale Gardens Complete. And your latest is Straw Bale Solutions, which it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to getting that book.
I'll be in Monroe, Wisconsin at the Green County Master Gardeners a week from tomorrow on March 10th, if anybody's interested. So
come over and see me. March 10th?
Yeah, Monroe, Wisconsin, the Green County Master Gardeners. People can look it up.
Joel Karsten, our guest today. Wasn't it fun talking with him? He's got so much enthusiasm for straw bale gardening, and it does work. I can tell you that. I've got my own experiences to prove it. Monday, we'll talk about transferring old analog media into digital forms. Stay with us.